Good evening, everybody. My name is Rob, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rob.
Welcome to the Tuesday night Big Book Step Work Group meeting. The format of this meeting is to closely examine the program of recovery as outlined in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We hope that this experience will motivate you into the active participation in the working or reworking of the 12 steps as outlined in the text. Some of the things we study tonight may go at odds with what many of us believed about AA recovery and what it means to be an AA member. This is not meant to be an indictment to anybody's sobriety or experience, but we do suggest that you have an open mind on the subject material covered tonight and be open to a new experience with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. There should be copies of the text in the back. I have some here in the front. If you need a book, they're $6. If you just want to borrow one for the meeting, go ahead. This group celebrates anniversaries at the end of each quarter. We're celebrating next week is anniversary week, right? Celebration? Mm-hmm. There are two of us on the list, so if anybody wants to celebrate here, we'd appreciate it. Otherwise, the speaker's going to talk for a really long time. We have April 14th. Doug M. from Florida is coming up and doing his shtick on how he can do this 12 steps in 4 hours. It's over in Tewksbury where the Friday night meeting used to be. I have one flyer left, so if anybody's interested, please take the contact information, or we'll have more flyers next week. We think it'll sell out. It's only $20, and Doug is one of the funniest guys in the world you'll ever meet. He spoke up at the Wilson House, and I think people will enjoy it. We also started a new thing here. We have tapes. We have Kerry from last week, and we still have some Rachel left from the week before, and we'll continue doing this. They're $2 if you're interested. Especially grabbing some women in recovery. There's not many recorded these days. We'll get you all recorded. Get you guys, help everybody get going. Anybody else have any AA-related announcements? Okay. I didn't ask anybody once again to read what is AA, so I'll read it. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This group also has a Big Book discussion meeting right here on Saturday nights at 6 p.m., May I please see a show of hands for those people willing to clean up after the meeting tonight? That's not just the seats, that's the kitchen too. Help. Coffee pots are a drag. I know. Thank you. This meeting runs an hour and 15 minutes. It ends at 9:15. The speaker goes until 9, and then we have 15 minutes of discussion. If anyone needs to get up and move around, please do so quietly. If you have pagers or cell phones, please turn them off or put them into the silent mode. We start the meeting with the set-aside prayer, so if you could all take a moment and try to quiet our minds from the thoughts of the day, I will say the prayer. God, we invite you into this room to guide and to direct each of us as we seek your truth. Please set aside within each of us that which would block us off from the truth. Lay aside our prejudices and what we think we know about the recovery process so that we may be open to a new experience. Remove our fears that we may hear your truth. Give us the strength and the courage to share your truth with each other in a real spirit of love and compassion. Amen. I'd like to introduce tonight's leader, Laura, and she's going to be talking about step 11.
Hi, everybody. My name's Laura. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Thank you. I was asked to come and speak about step 11, I guess about 3 months ago, something like that. And I was a little nervous because step 11 is, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. It's always been hard for me to sit and meditate, and I've tried sitting and meditating, when I've tried practicing step 11 and lighting a candle and meditating, and in the beginning, it's really hard because I don't know about you guys, but for me, I sit there like, I'm meditating, and as soon as I'm done doing this, I'm going to go do the laundry, and then, you know, and my mind is kind of, so staying focused has always been kind of a problem for me. And so when Mary Beth, I've always prayed, and prayer is a part of my day, and it's a part of my life, and whenever I'm in really bad shakes or really good shakes throughout the course of the day, I'm always checking in. But I really thought, like, okay, now I have to go and I have to share my experience on step 11, and I really need to get some experience with step 11. And so I really tried to focus on it and really try prayer and meditation. And I have to tell you that I've had a really incredible experience over the past couple of months really focusing on step 11. And I thought, you know, I've got to kill an hour here. So I thought what it would be good to do is I'm going to kind of read through the step with you, and I'll stop and kind of just talk, and then maybe if there's time at the end, maybe we can do a little meditation. And that's that. So that's what we'll do. We'll get started. And I'm reading from page 85 into action when they start talking about step 11. And it reads, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Now, I had read, you know, I've read the big book before, and when I really started this thing that I was really going to focus on step 11, and I really read this, I thought about how I pray. And I'm always praying for, you know, for people that I know need prayer, or, you know, praying for God's will in certain situations. But to actually sit and reflect over the course of my day, you know, the past 24 hours that I've been sitting in my behavior over the past 24 hours. And what I love about it is they talk about, you know, we can't make it a morbid reflection, because, you know, as an alcoholic, I really have a tendency to beat myself up. But in beating myself up, it's really selfish behavior, because what I'm doing is I'm doing something that already doesn't feel right, and then I'm continuing to beat myself up about it so that I can then feel sorry for myself about it. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to anyone? Okay. So anyway, to really be honest about my day, you know, was I kind and loving toward all, like everyone? You know, my husband, my children, and I don't know about you guys, but I find the hardest place to really be kind is with the people you love the most, because that's who we are, you know. So anyway, I sat and asked myself those questions, and what has happened for me, at least, is that I'm more in tune with what I'm doing every day, you know, how I'm treating people every day. It talks a lot in the 11th step about, you know, listening. Like, is there something that's happening in our lives right now that we don't have an answer to, and we really want an answer to? And what I've learned from step 11 is that sometimes the answer is that there is no answer, and we have to wait. And I've learned that from practicing step 11. I have to say that I've been to many step 11 meetings, and I was always the one in the back that raised my hand and said, well, you know, how do you do this meditation thing? Because I've already told you all about what happens in my brain when I start to meditate and I go off on doing the laundry or the dishes or whatever. And focusing on, you know, my concept of God and I was always the one asking, and people, you know, Chris has said to me, go into the Barnes & Noble and just pick out some books in the religious aisle and read. And I've read a lot of religious books, and this meditation thing is a constant in just about all religions, you know. So I'm trying to figure out what it is I'm trying to say here. I had a point, and I've lost it. Anyway, so step 11. What I also like about when I read this step is the fact that it's all the writing in the big book is very simple, and so you can remember it. And when they read the part about awakening. Ooh, I lost my page. Thank you. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised at how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. But being still inexperienced at having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. I was reading that tonight because I was trying to think about what I was going to say, and I've been inspired a lot of times in sobriety. I know that in early sobriety I was inspired, you know, we start feeling better, and then I started dating people in AA. You know, that was an inspiration, a God-given inspiration. Wrong. We start to learn what's really God-given and what's not God-given, and really starting to trust that. But I've had... When I moved to Copenhagen, and that was really hard, I moved away from, my core AA group into a foreign city. And when I got there, I was connected with AA, but I've always been somebody that goes to church. Church is not a requirement here, of course, but I've always gone, and I'm still very active in my church. But I couldn't find a church. And it was, we had passed the Christmas season, we had had to put my dog to sleep, I had picked up a glass of wine when I was in Copenhagen, and I was in really bad shakes, and I really think that it was the first time in a long time at that moment that I really prayed and meant it, you know, because I really felt like I needed a home. I had tried to go to an English church, and it was Episcopalian and very dark and staunch and unwelcoming. And then I went to another church, and it was like holy rollers with the arms up in the air and an hour and a half, and my God only needs an hour on Sunday. So and so I was really desperate because I just felt so alone, you know, even though I just felt really alone because church has been a constant in my life. That's part of me, and that's part of my my relationship with God. But I came home after that, after going to the Holy Rollers group, and I cried because I really felt so alone, and I really prayed with meaning, like, God, I need to find a church, and I feel really alone, and I really need your help, and I really need your guidance. So please, you know, can you help me with this? And the very next day, I ran into somebody on the train that I knew, and she told me about this church in Copenhagen called the International Church of Copenhagen, which is what I thought the Holy Rollers group was, but it wasn't. And she told me about where it was, and I went with my daughter the very next Sunday, and the bulletin looked just like the bulletin that I was used to, and the very first song, the very first hymn that was sung was Lift High the Cross, which was played at my wedding ceremony when I got married, and the closing hymn was Morning Has Broken, which I danced with my father with at my wedding day. And it was just an example of how, at least how I feel, my experience has been when we really tune in and pray with meaning, because I really think God wants to hear us. He wants to hear what we have to say. And I know that I've been guilty of, you know, upon awakening, we get up and we ask God, and I don't wake up happy. I don't. I never have. It seems to run in my family. My brother doesn't wake up happy. My father doesn't. And so, you know, there have been times when I've been doing this 3-month practicing of step 11 that I'm like, upon awakening, you know, God, please help me today. You know, help me not be selfish, and my husband's driving me crazy, and help me deal with that. But I don't wake up happy. And sometimes my prayers are really, really half-assed, but I find that when I really focus, and take the time to really focus and really mean it, that my prayers are always answered. And I think God has a wonderful sense of humor, and he plays wonderful jokes on us all the time. I had an inspiration last year around this time. I was in, oh my gosh, I had moved home from Europe. I got mono and pneumonia. My husband got depressed and left. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was really, like, this time last year, I was really out of my mind. There was so much going on, and it was really hard. It was a really hard time. And I find, and it happens every time, whenever I go through times in my life of real, pure turmoil, and it happens because life happens and things don't go the way that we want to go, and relationships are tough, and things happen, that having that constant, that God that's been in my life all of the time, it always helps and it always works. And so even in the height of all of this uncertainty and pain, oh my God, it was so painful, I knew it was going to be okay. And I knew that no matter what the outcome was going to be, it was going to be all right. Because what I've learned here is if it doesn't kill us and we get through it, we get through it, period, no matter what it is. And I've heard awful things happen to people in sobriety. And this was really, it was awful, but it was tolerable, and I made it through it, and my family is still intact and stuff. But anyway, I woke up one morning, and I had been thinking about, you know, I told you our dog Ben died when I was in Copenhagen, and I loved dogs, and I loved Ben. But I woke up one morning in the middle of all of this turmoil, and I was like, I have to get a dog today. Now, a lot of people call that impulsive, but I was doing a lot of praying, and I felt that morning like a dog is my answer. And I went to 2 different dog shelters, and I found an elk hound mix, which is what Ben was. His name is Darnell, and he's living at my house now and with my 2 kids, and he is the greatest dog you've ever met in your life, and it was like he was meant to be in my house. And so, you know, I've certainly, you know, my mistakes being inspired with men was a big mistake, but being inspired for Darnell was not a mistake. So, again, it's learning to differentiate what's really truly inspired and what's inspired, you know. Anyway, moving on. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that can be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. I've certainly done prayer for my own selfish ends before I came in here. You know, when I once ran into, this is in my drinking days, the big flashing arrow signs on the highway that tell you to get over, I ran straight into one. It was lit. I don't know how. It was like 4:30 in the morning, and I was coming home from an after-hours club in New York. You can imagine what condition I was in. And so I hit this flashing arrow, and my car is spewing steam, and I'm praying, oh, God, please just get me home, just get me home. And I got home, you know. But that's not what they're talking about here in step 11. The prayers that I say today are different in the fact that I'm not asking for, you know, I don't pray to God and ask for money. I don't pray to God and ask for, selfish things. You know, all the stuff I used to ask for because I don't have to ask for it anymore. I remember being up all night, doing cocaine and drinking and all sorts of stuff. And I was in New York, and it was like 7:30 in the morning on a weekday. And I remember looking out the window at the people going to work and wanting so badly to be one of those people that was just going to work, because I even remember how awful I felt. And I remember asking God to help me then, you know, really, really meaning it. But the problem is, until I'm willing to do what I have to do to make things better, it's all going to be the same. You know, God gives me comfort in the fact that, and I believe my God is a woman. I always call him he, but it helps me to relate to God as a female. It's up to me to do the work that needs to be done. I've been really struggling with not smoking, and I was hoping to come here tonight and tell you all, like, even step 11 cured me from smoking cigarettes, which it did for about 3 weeks. But I have to be willing, because I know it doesn't feel right anymore. And when I wake up in the morning and I ask God to lead my thinking for the day, cigarettes just aren't his will, you know, and yet I continue to do this. But I continue to do it, you know. I lasted for 3 weeks, and it was my first shot, and I know that the cigarettes are going to be a hard thing, but I know that step 11 is going to be my answer. It's going to be my answer. Cigarettes, I'm trying to fill a void that only God can fill, and I'm trying to do it with cigarettes, and I keep banging my head against the same wall. But he'll help me with that, too. Step 11 has improved my relationship with my husband because of the fact that I wake up in the morning now and I'm asking for freedom from selfish thoughts and self-centeredness and self-pity and fear. And I also pray to see the good in the people that I love. And to be able to do that and understand that truly, you know, when I'm complaining about everybody in my house, I'm the one with the problem. And that's so true. And it's getting myself centered and making myself see why I love this person or why I love my children when they're driving me crazy. I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I have a client who said to me today, I remember 2 and 4. They were really cute, but I'm happy to just watch it on video, you know. And and it's so true. But when I'm not feeling right, and when Mary Beth asked me to do this a while ago, you know, I was really going through a hard time with acceptance and really being willing to turn my will and my life over to a care of a higher power at the time. And in focusing on this and in saying I'm sorry when I need to say I'm sorry and reviewing my day and doing the 10th step and the 11th step work, it's improved my relationships. It's really improved my relationship with my husband. I'm trying to think of what else I can say about step 11. This is why I was reluctant to do this, because I'm like, step 11? How long can you talk about step 11? Anyway, I'm on page 23, I'm sorry. Going back. Here, yes, this is funny. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious domination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. I thought that that was funny because I hear, you know, I've been to a lot of speaking commitments and heard people talk about being able to pray with their spouses and stuff. And I always think that's so nice. I'm married to a recovering Catholic, and he's a really, really anti-religion. But I've been taking baby steps with the whole prayer thing because I really think it would be sweet. But it's my, like, this is my deal. I don't force my stuff on my husband. He's a regular earth person. He's not an alcoholic. You know, he tries to be understanding, but he's not one of us, you know. And he sees that this stuff works for me. Like, when he sees me getting agitated, he's like, have you called anybody today? Are you going to a meeting tonight? You know, he's in tune that way. He really is. And, I've always, thought to myself, well, it would have been nice to marry somebody in recovery so that we could all do this together. But, you know, I've heard that it doesn't really matter, does it? But baby steps, like I've got two little kids, so we started saying prayers at the dinner table. You know, that's a way that we can all start praying together without him thinking that I'm trying to suck him into some religious cult, which is what a lot of people think that we are. And so we do dinner prayers, and now he's remembering, like, oh, we have to say prayers. So he's remembering to do that. And now we say the little family prayer, you know, Father, we thank you for this food. Help us to be kind and honest and good. And please be with so-and-so tonight, you know. And so I'm starting this thing, and I think that he thinks it's really kind of strange and awkward. He left the Catholic Church at 16. He had to go to church on, he went to Catholic school and church on Saturdays and Sundays, and he was just like, that's it, Mom, I'm never going again. And I was really kind of shocked that I even got him into a church to get married. But what I've learned is my God is personal, and I go to church. I don't force my husband to do that. I let him do whatever he wants to do. This is my relationship, and all that he knows is that my relationship with God makes me a nicer person, and so that's fine. You know what I mean? So, anyway, so that's that. Meditation. I wanted to talk about meditation because I'm one of those people that meditation does not come easy to me. And if I can do it, if I can really do it and really focus, like that, this is how novice I am. Like 5 minutes is really as deep as I can do right now. 5-10 minutes. It seems like a long time to me. But it's also it's having the strains of having, you know, two part-time jobs and two kids and all that other stuff. It's just hard to find time to sit and be quiet. But I try, and I do find time, and I really do try to focus. My life is really busy and amazing and beautiful today, and that is all a direct result of my being sober. I love my life. I'm busy all the time. That's the way that I've always wanted to be, and it's always amazing to me because when I drank, I did nothing. I did nothing. I couldn't, like, I remember trying to go to night school when I was drinking. I couldn't make it to class. If I started drinking before class, I wasn't going. When I had a job down in Somerset, I drove a 1972 gold Lincoln Mercury. You can't imagine how enormous this car was. And I would go to the bar at lunch. And, of course, once you went to the bar for lunch, I was not going back, and it happened every time. I never went to the bar at lunch and returned to my office. So I would call and say I had car trouble from the bar that's down the street from my office And there's this huge gold Lincoln Mercury sitting in front of the bar. And everybody knows that this is my vehicle, you know. That was some of the stupid stuff I did. And, of course, I got fired from that job, and I thought that they'd never fire me because I was earning them a lot of money, you know. And they fired me, and I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked that they let somebody with as much talent of mine as mine out the door. But anyway, I don't know why I told that story. I was thinking about it today. Probably because of Step 11. I mean, I remember that day getting fired, and you know, when I think about all of the prayers that I've said over the course of my life, and I was devastated that day, and I tried to get my job back. I spent the whole next day on the phone with people, calling people, seeing if they could get my job back. Can you imagine how pathetic that was? You know, I'm down the street at the bar. Like, twice my manager had to talk to me because I smelled like booze when I came into the office in the morning. And yet I would tell you that I didn't have a drinking problem. All those people were out to get me, don't you know? So Step 11 is really good for me because my life is really full and it's so wonderful and I've got so much going on. But I have to keep everything balanced, and that's where I have a really hard time, because isn't this what we always wanted, to be successful and to be able to go to school and pass our classes and to be able to have relationships with people? Isn't that what we always wanted? And so we get into sobriety and we have that, and I really think that my balancing tool comes in Step 3 and Step 11. Because when I get with God in the morning, when I really do that, and I really focus, and I take that time to just be quiet and think about the things that are going on in my life and what I have coming up over the course of the day and how I've been treating my family members and what can I do to make it better, not what can I do to beat myself up, but what can I do to make it a little bit better, things just fall into place. I was supposed to be at a deacon's meeting at my church tonight. I was ordained as a deacon a couple weeks ago, which is great because I get to do all the codependent work, like working with the homeless and the seniors and all that stuff, and I love that. I just love that. We're the mission givers. But Mary Beth asked me to do this a couple of months ago, and this is my priority tonight. I need AA because if I get drunk again, I lose everything. I lose everything. A really good friend of mine, he celebrated 26 years of sobriety, and then we found out that he had been drinking for the past 3. You know, going to meetings all the time, and his wife took him to the hospital because she thought he was losing his mind. He was drunk. And I know that that's where we go. I have a daily reprieve, and Step 11 reminds me that I have a daily reprieve. Step 11 reminds me that I can start over. Step 11 teaches me that I'm not screwed. Step 11 teaches me that I'm human. And that I won't be perfect, and I will make mistakes, and I will lose my temper, and I will feel lost sometimes, but there will always be an answer. And really, again, it really is important that I understand that when I've got a really big question and a really big decision to make, that it's okay to wait. I've always shot from the hip my whole life, you know, quick fixes, quick answers, you know, and not always the great solution. When I keep my mouth shut, I stay out of trouble, I find, and in waiting. That was the hardest part. You know, I had problems in my marriage last year, and it's hard. I talk about these things because we all have problems in our marriages, you know, we all do. And when I finally accepted the fact that there wasn't going to be an answer that day, everything was better. It was all better. And I kept my mouth shut, and I was kind, and I was loving, and everything worked out okay. And if I can do that with just every situation, the answer always comes, and it works out. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out the way that I expected it to, but the outcome is always the way it's exactly supposed to be. So anyway, I've had a really great experience working with Step 11 over the past couple of months, and I'm sorry if I'm kind of like broken talking about this. It's an intimidating step to me, and I've been kind of nervous about coming here and talking to you about it because I wish I could stand up here and sound like a guru, but I'm just an alcoholic, and I'm trying to stay sober one day at a time, and I have to say that I've relapsed. I had a bad relapse, and I've come back to the rooms after that, and it's really hard. It's really hard to come back after a relapse. But what all of that taught me is that, A, I'm really, really, really an alcoholic if I ever had any question in my mind before, and B, that God is the most important thing in my life. And I do. I talk to God a lot over the course of my day, because I need to remember that all of this is a gift, and I'm not really in control of anything, you know, except for how I handle things. And also, I was watching, there was something on HBO about addiction, and I didn't watch it for very long. It was some psychiatrist talking about alcoholism and addiction. But why did I bring that up? Something that he said. Anyway, I didn't agree with it. I'm trying to remember what it was that he said. Oh, yes, is that, and it really, it clued me in because sometimes I still feel really emotionally immature, you know, like I do. Like I can still weep sometimes. Like sometimes that's happened to me before where you're in a business situation and I'm so frustrated that I need to go into the ladies' room and cry, and thank God I go into the ladies' room and cry, but that still happens to me at 38 years old. Not all the time, but like, you know, maybe once a year that'll happen to me. And I do sometimes wonder, like, God, what's the matter with me? How come it seems like the rest of the planet can handle all of this stuff? And here I am, a child sometimes. But what the psychiatrist talked about was the fact that we really do, and I know that I've heard this before, but it really struck me, we really do stop that ability to learn how to deal with problems and conflict when we start self-medicating at a really young age. And I started with, you know, Scotch whiskey at 11, you know. And so, yeah, sometimes I can still be a little childish about things. And so Step 11 helps me to grow up, too, because if I can remember that the outcome is going to be whatever it is, and it's really not that big of a deal, because it's my head that makes everything such a big deal. Because half of the crap that we worry about is really unimportant. It's true. It's really true. Right now, I'm starting you know, a business on my own, and I'm working part time, and I've got these two girls, and money's becoming an issue. And you know, I've learned to realize that some days you have money and some days you don't. And you do what you gotta do. And I've never been homeless before, and so I don't think I'm gonna be homeless now, you know? So I think it's all gonna be okay. And I could sit and I could worry, but that's some of the old crap that I used to do. I really have faith that it's all gonna be okay, you know? And if I have to, I have to go get a regular job. Maybe we have to downsize. You know, there's answers. There's answers to my problems today, which I never had when I was drunk all the time. I never had any answers. I really thought that, you know, the police were out to get me, and Division of Motor Vehicles was out to get me. And did everybody have Division of Motor Vehicle problems? No. Ugly. Anyway, what time is it? Oh, sweet. Okay. No, I think what we're going to do is let me finish this. Oh, as we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful, we ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy as foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. And I love this. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. And really, that's the truth. The answers to my problems, at least my emotional problems, are spiritual today. And I keep plugging along. I've learned that my relationship with my higher power grows and changes the longer that I stay sober. And there are times when I feel really connected to God, like I have the past couple of months, and there are times when I don't. And I think that that's normal, too. Sometimes we feel a little disconnect. We feel a little alone. But I think that those are times when, at least for me, if I'm honest with myself, when I'm feeling like that, it's usually because I'm really trying to run the show. I'm trying to solve all the problems myself. I'm trying to find the answers for everybody else. And if everybody would just do what I said, it would all be fine. And that's when I find that I feel that sense of disconnect. And I say, "God, why aren't you with me? I don't feel like you're here." And that's because I'm doing the same thing that I've always done, thinking that I have all the answers. And I just don't. I'm just another alcoholic trying to stay sober. So anyway, I thought what we could do tonight, since we have another 15 minutes. Let's do a little meditation, shall we? All right, I'd like everybody to get comfortable. Now, in some of the books that I've read, you know, yoga teaches you that you need to be, like, everything needs to be connected to the ground, because the energy comes up and through you and around, and so your fingers need to be connected, your feet need to be on the floor. That's why I stopped reading that stuff, because that'll really make a mind like mine crazy when I'm trying to meditate. Am I connected? Are my feet on the floor? You know? Am I doing this right? Are you there, God? You know? Anyway, okay, let's close our eyes. Breathing helps too, I've read in books. And then, as it talks about in step 11, let's think about our day and how were we today? How did we treat the people that we love today? Were we afraid? Is there an apology that you might owe somebody for today? Is there something that you might be able to do better tomorrow? Do you need to make a phone call when you get home to talk to somebody about something that happened today? Nothing about tomorrow. Is there something that's going on tomorrow that maybe you need an answer for that you don't have one? Maybe there's some action you can take. Maybe it's time to just sit and wait. And I'll close this with a quick prayer. God, thank you for this beautiful first day of spring day that we had today. Thank you for the opportunity for us all to be together and working for the same goal as recovery. Thank you for being with us. Amen. How's everybody feel? But anyway, that is the end of my talk on step 11. Thanks for meditating with me. And I'm sorry I'm such a novice, but that's all I know. I think we have a question, yeah? Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Does anybody else have any questions? Yes, Pete.
I thought you did a great job.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for what you shared today. Amazing as that may be, it was really wonderful. And the idea of meditating on the meaning of God is great. The way you handle the meditation is really nice. Asking the questions is kind of in this guided sense. It's really good for what. I practice the 11th step every day. I'm not as diligent with it at night as I like to be, or as disciplined with it at night time. But it's part of the day, the morning. And you know, I know what you mean about waking up with the direct thinking prayer. When I'm really connected to my higher power, to the God of my understanding, that prayer right from the start has so much power in the day. And if I'm not, I say it anyway, and but it just doesn't quite connect the same way. It doesn't have the same kind of really word to use. But that prayer is amazing because, you know, dishonest, selfish, dishonest. It's just, it's so right on the money.
Yeah.
About, you know, the things about myself that are rejection, things that are not from God, those are things that the problems are not from God. And I need to be tonight. I'm so glad that I was here. And I got something to do.
Thanks. Yes?
Hi, I'm Rita.
Hi, Rita.
And I got to tell you, how many of you think it's just so awesome for me? It's a little wild because you and I are almost the exact same age, both married to a kind person, both have I have a daughter about the same age as your, my daughter's 3 3/4. And, you know, all of the things that you describe are always just so right in the center of everything that, like, is going on, which means it's very important to have you around. meet as a rattlesnake sometimes, and I'm laying in my bedroom.
Anyone else? Mary Beth.
Thanks, Mary Beth.
Thanks. Yes. Hi, Dave.
I don't really want to follow anybody anymore. I'm in a situation in my life.
Well, I think I really wanted to prepare. I felt really painfully unprepared for, you know. Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Well, and it was funny because I was talking to my, I have a client, now she doesn't know that I'm in AA, of course, and she's having a divorce, and there's kids involved and stuff like that. And she's not one of us, but I was able to help her because I think I have come to understand in AA, and only in AA did I come to understand this. It's the anticipation of an event that I don't know the outcome to that is so uncomfortable. Once I get the answer, even when it's absolutely not what I want, I can deal with it. But it's that period between getting the answer and waiting for the answer to come that's so uncomfortable, especially when it's some huge life-changing thing. Once we get the answer, we can deal with it. But it's that period of like, well, what if this, and then what if this, and where am I going to go, and what am I going to do, and is everything going to be okay, what about my kids, and that kind of stuff. But really, God was really smart when he made us, because we really can't survive so many unbelievable things. It's just the anticipation and the fear, and I guess if you're a good alcoholic like myself, it's the lack of control, the feeling like, what can I do to make it turn into what I want it to turn into? And life isn't like that, you know? And sometimes we don't get what we want, but I can always handle it. And once it happens, even when those times happen, and it's absolutely the worst case scenario that I thought of, and that never happens. But even if, I can still deal with it. Because if it doesn't kill me, I get through it. Every single thing. When my husband left last year, and again, we're back together, and I love him very much, and we have a wonderful relationship, but you know what I learned from that experience? If he were to pack up and leave, I would be heartbroken, but I would be okay. And my life would go on, and I would continue to be a mother to my children, and I would continue to work and put a roof over our heads, and that's what I would do. I guess what's so beautiful about AA is that I didn't have any of this confidence when I walked in the door. You know, I was at the mercy of the guy I was living with. I was at the mercy of my boss. I was at the mercy of, you know, the liquor store who I had bounced checks to. You know, I was at the mercy of everyone by choice. You know, and AA and God and all of you wonderful people and a great sponsor and the steps and step 11 have turned me into an effective member of society. Imagine that. I was pushing a shopping cart and almost unemployable 12 years ago. So, anyway. Any other questions? Yes? Yes.
Thank you.
I'm kind of passing that thing around to everybody tonight. So. Thank you. Will that be it? Oh, one more. What time is it? Oh, okay. My wedding. I danced with my father. Morning has broken. It's a waltz, in case you didn't know.
Yeah, it was my
wedding
song also.
It was?
I think
it's the power of people together doing the same thing.
Well, you also made me think, and I don't do this. I did it, and now I stopped it. Well, we're kind of loving to all. I was cutting people off left and right there. Being very aggressive, opportunistic, and driving. Because I didn't leave enough time to get to where I was going, so I had to drive the rest of it. When I leave enough time, I drive like a normal citizen. So
Why do I keep picking up cigarettes?
Right. When you feel so good, when you're doing things the right way, and, the constant struggle I have,
Thanks. Anyone else? All right, we have a nice way of closing. What? Well, thank you all for being such a kind group of people. Okay, Mary Beth wants to take us out.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,